Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. We're going to talk some USC Trojan football today, as we always do here on the Peristyle Podcast. We've got Dan Weber on the line, Keely Yore in studio, and I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, talking some USC Trojan football. If you have any questions or comments for us, please email us, podcast@uscfootball.com. We'd love to hear from you. You can also text or call. The number is 424-254-9141. Got a bunch of questions we want to get to today. Lots to talk about. USC football, even though it's kind of a slow time, there's still always news and little tidbits going on around USC football. It was a rather sad day yesterday. We talked about it on the podcast. We lost a colleague and friend and Gary Paskowitz at 52 years old. And I got to say my piece yesterday with Harvey Hyde and Pete Arbogast, but I know Dan Weber and Keely, you haven't said anything. So before we jump into the show, maybe Dan, we'll start with you and then we'll go with Keely.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody who we knew, you know, that Gary hadn't been feeling good. It didn't look like at the end of the season. But I know somebody who was fairly close to him who felt like after talking to him maybe a week ago that he was feeling better and that, you know, there was hope because I know we were scheduled to speak at a Trojan Football Fanatics in Vista at the end of February. And Ryan has agreed to step in and take Gary's place. But we'd been doing that for like 6 or 7 years, and twice a year. And Gary would come in and talk about all the recruiting stuff and the prospects. And he's so upbeat. And then they would let me talk about the other stuff with USC football, the good and the bad. And it was kind of like we had this little, you know, two-man act going with us. And it's just so hard to believe, you know, that Gary, who was next to us in every football game in the press box and, you know, right down at his assigned spot, you know, sitting on his little collapsible stool at practice every day, that he won't be there. He did so much. I think both Gary and Ryan just did so much for, in terms of covering, you know, college football teams, that you guys were a couple of the real pioneers, you know, nationally as to, you know, how to do this. And USC football has benefited, you know, an awful lot from what you guys were able to do. But I think, well, really, he's just such a positive, pleasant, decent, just really warm, human being who cared so much about USC and USC football, and just can't say how much he'll be missed.
Yeah, it's still kind of in the surreal stage for me right now. I don't think it will really be real until we get to spring practice. And, you know, it's everyone talks about his chair, but Gary was kind of like a pillar in that corner of our little media pin. That was where he set up and saw everything. So it's just really surreal. But like, even before I became a part of this site, trying to get to know USC and USC football, since that wasn't my thing growing up, Gary and Ryan were kind of the two pillars of the authority of USC football and what you should know. And so the fact that like an institution in my mind of USC media is just gone, it's like, it's really surreal.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. And we've known each other a long time, and like I said before, it's kind of like we were competitors, but we were partners trying to get, you know, the internet accepted as a media source. And now it's the dominant, you know, media practices. So it's really sad. And, you know, just sad to see Gary, go like that, but everyone's going to keep fighting on for him, and we'll, you know, keep him in our thoughts and prayers and his family and everything. And we don't know anything about, people want to know about services or any kind of memorial stuff. So we'll let you know when we get into that. Well, Gary loved talking about USC football, and that's what we're here to talk about. Nothing, we haven't heard anything like official from USC, but there's some storylines floating around with Ivan Lewis reportedly, you know, nothing been named official, but going to the Seattle Seahawks and be reunited with Pete Carroll. Still searching for an offensive coordinator, so still an open office in the John McKay Center. So still a bunch going on, Dan.
Yeah, I was walking as I do every day in the morning, walking the dogs in the park, and a guy walks up to me and says, "Still don't have an offensive coordinator, do they?" No, I don't. He had an interesting thought. He said, "Have they ever thought about Jim Jones? He was one of the, you know, originators of some of this stuff." And I thought, "Huh, that's interesting." I know you guys had kind of run into him in Hawaii, I believe.
Well, hey, Dan, hold on for 1 second because we have a question on that, so I might as well play it right now since you brought it up. So here we'll go with it. We'll change the narrative. Here you go. 1 second.
Yeah, this is Ray in Pasadena. I'm listening to you guys on the podcast again and, you know, running through all these names and trying to figure out what the SEC staff is supposed to do and what Lynn Swann is supposed to do. And I know Coach Hyde talked about the old man Chow. How about reaching back a little bit more and going with June Jones? Anybody ever decided to contact him and see whether or not he's available? He was one of the architects over there in Hawaii who had all those offensive quarterbacks and wide receivers and so forth. Why didn't somebody go after him? I'm sure he'd come out of retirement and fool around for a couple of years and try to get this squared away. Let's take a look at somebody like that. Why does it have to be one of these younger coaches? Let's go after a guy like him or go after Chow. Doesn't have to be all these other idiots that you guys have been mentioning. Anyway, it's me in Pasadena. I tried to keep it clean this time. I'm listening to you guys. It's frustrating sometimes because you keep hashing the same crap over and over again. And there's a lot to be said for some of these guys that claim they're 4-star, 5-star, 3-star. You get them out on the football field, and all of a sudden, after having 10 years of football, they really don't want to put in the time, and they find other activities to do over at SC. Anyway, June Jones, let's go look into him.
All right. That's Ray in Pasadena, Dan. And just so people know, June Jones is the co-offensive coordinator for the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the Canadian Football League. And he was the offensive coordinator for, I think it was Team Mauka at the Poly Bowl. And his team's offense, I think, only scored 7 points. They didn't do very well. So I don't know. That was Juju's team. But just a little – we ran and June Jones actually – charged his phone using my wife's Jana's charger. So he came over and he needed a charge. So we talked to him a little bit, but just to give you a little background before you jump into it.
Yeah, I like the idea of a guy who doesn't have to ask somebody, what do you think we ought to do here? What do you think we ought to do there? And, you know, a guy that kind of, and that was the, you know, obvious advantage of Cliff Kingsbury. He didn't need to, you know, get an input from here or there or wherever. He just was going to be able to come in, and I'm in charge, I'm going to run it, and what have you. And I do think that's the attraction, you know, for, and it's been hard to keep up with, you know, since June left from Hawaii with those, you know, really good teams, and one of the quarterbacks, I'm trying to think, from Orange County, and you know, had the leading, you know, quarterbacks in the country back-to-back, I think Timmy Chang and Kashwai Colt, something or other.
Colt Brennan.
And then... Yeah, yeah, okay. And then he went to Southern Methodist and didn't exactly have enough talent to compete there. And I think he's coached in, you know, some high school and went to the, you know, Canadian League and all of that. I don't know where he is in terms of, like, with Norm Chow, also maybe past maybe that point where you could come back and do. I just don't know for sure. But, yeah, I like the idea of somebody like that. Heck, I'd even take a, you know, an interview with Hal Mumme, who was actually at Kentucky when I was still living back in Kentucky, and he was really the originator of the air raid. I mean, he was – Mike Leach was his offensive coordinator at Kentucky. And so Mike Leach learned it, you know, from Hal Mumme. And I'm not absolutely – and Hal went to – you know, after Kentucky, he went to New Mexico State, and he's got, you know, a really kind of an interesting history with NCAA stuff and all of that, but he was an original, one of a kind. I would just like someone who could come in and say, I'll take over the offense. what I'm coaching matches up with the talent that we're going to have at USC. Just get out of the way and let me do my thing, and we'll be fine. They really need it at USC right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting name, June Jones. Ray doesn't like the young whippersnappers. He wants some some old veteran guys. But I think when it goes on, Keely, like when it goes on this long, you're just going to like, there's just going to be more and more names coming up. And, you know, we just did an update on the Hot Board 2.0. I called everyone I could call, the whole team. And it's like, it wasn't crickets, but it was pretty close to crickets. There's just not a lot, it seems, going on with this right now, or at least there nothing's getting out of there.
Yeah, we're kind of in a weird gray area right now. But it's also that time of year, you know. January is kind of the calm before the storm in February with recruiting and whatnot. But it's to have it quiet on the coaching stand front too is just a little odd, especially after the drama that exploded with Cliff. And now it's kind of, you're just waiting around and seeing. So I don't know.
I mean, what it kind of leaves you with the thought that A, it's going to be a guy who's still coaching in the NFL.
Yep.
And nobody wants to disturb that, which is Jed Fish with the Rams. Or it's B, which is it's someone on the USC staff who will be moved into that position, and maybe another hire will be made for his position or another hire, period. It would seem to be leaning to one of those two scenarios, neither of which is exactly probably what a lot of people wanted after the Cliff Kingsbury, era. So you would think that that's more likely, that either it's somebody who, you know, can't be named yet because he's still coaching, and that, you know, very much narrows it down, or it's going to be somebody on the staff and they probably don't want to tell anybody that right now.
Yeah, I think I feel like the gut feeling I get is that all the eggs were in the Cliff Kingsbury basket, and then there wasn't really a lot of backup plans and stuff going on if that didn't work out. So it was sort of like a reset, like, okay, we got to go back and figure things out. And I don't feel like they were going to be in a rush. You'd like to get it done, you know, as quickly as possible, because you want to prepare not just for signing day, but preparing for spring football. But I do feel, Dan, some of it might have just been getting caught off guard a little bit, and then sort of a little bit slower reaction than maybe some of the fans would want.
And I guess the other thought is they have to be so absolutely certain that the guy they go after, that where it becomes in any way public, they can't miss. It's just, I don't know what you could, you know, hold his, you know, nearest relatives hostage or something like that. If, you know, sign a, you know, how much of a buyout you could put in, or whatever. It's just, you know, they're at a place where they know we cannot flub this. We cannot miss on this guy. We cannot, you know, sign him and that he leaves for something else. They're in a difficult place, I think, at this point. This has to be 100% absolutely dead certain, and maybe they're a little gun shy at that point. I would be.
Do we have any other offensive coordinator questions, Keely? We probably should just kind of stay on topic with that till we switch to something else.
We do, in the sense of, we got a question from Don, and when we talked about the offensive coordinator and previous podcasts and tunnel visions, we said that getting a guy who, it's his offense, he runs it. And so we've talked about Clay Helton being in a CEO role and how that might help the team going forward. But Don says, why make Helton the CEO with good coordinators? Helton has too many responsibilities? If USC does not want to pay the buyout, keep him and make him a very, very high paid recruiting coordinator, doesn't make sense to destroy the program by keeping Helton as head coach.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's an opinion held by a lot of people. But, you know, after the sense that maybe it was going to happen, and then Lynn Swann, you know, said, no, we're not doing it, we want stability, I think, you know, people have gone past that now. Yeah, that's an argument you can certainly make. But then that would also maybe require more of a reworking of the coaching staff as well. I mean, if you're bringing somebody new in, I don't know how many people. I mean, I think you could have, Cliff Kingsbury might have been able to be shifted over to the head coaching role and not have had to say, I need to hire a whole new staff. Because I don't think USC is about to do that. But I don't know that you would go to a place unless you really, you know, have gotten all kinds of financial backing from, you know, from outside the university who, you know, would say, hey, we're going to underwrite everything you do. You know, we'll underwrite the buyouts for the old coaches and the new coaches, and we'll get them all in here. And what? And I don't see that happening at USC right now. I don't see anybody that can put that together. So I don't know that that thought is a viable one at this point in time.
Yeah.
We have a lot of OC questions. So if you just want to get into questions, we can do that.
Well, maybe we'll I think the other thing we want to talk about is the strength and conditioning.
Yes.
Coach, so nothing official on, you know, we've heard from sources that that Ivan Lewis is no longer there. If you know the longtime strength and conditioning coach for Pete Carroll, Chris Carlisle, has moved on. He's no longer there. So they were together like 18 years. I mean, it was like a long time, like pretty much his whole time at USC and then with Seattle. So that was a long time coming. Dan, I know you mentioned a name, John Brown, in the war room. We had a voicemail question on that. So maybe I'll play it and then we'll talk about USC strength and conditioning coaching going forward. So I'll play this for you. And here we go.
Curtis from Moreno Valley. Dan Weber, great idea. They should not only bring in Amon-Ra's father, John Brown, to be the strength and conditioning consultant. He should be the coach. I don't care if he hasn't done it at the college level. All his sons are very muscular, and they don't get injured that much. They're very tough. He has a very strict weight training regimen for his sons with and nutrition regimen. And he's a two-time Mr. Universe. He knows how to put muscle and keep your speed. We need to bring him in. Good thinking, Dan. I'm in 100% on that. Curtis from Moreno Valley.
Yeah, Curtis. I mean, I think... John Brown, I know there were some, maybe people who objected, say, well, bodybuilding is completely different from, you know, a building strength for football. But if you look at, you know, and we've gotten to see the two older sons, but we see up close Amon-Ra, and he's about as perfectly built for college football as any kid we've ever seen coming out of high school. And he's also... has an attitude. I mean, you never hear in the summer before these kids have even started that, you know, this kid's the leader. We were hearing that already. He hadn't been in a game yet, and you're hearing this incoming freshman is the guy everybody respects. So that's a real plus. I just thought USC has a lot of resources if they take advantage of them. For example, like a John Brown, he could be a consultant in both the weight training, the strength part of it, and the nutrition part of it. I mean, I would like to see them bring some people in and take a look at every part of, strength and conditioning and nutrition. And there are a lot of those people. I mean, we talked about people posted the video of Aaron Osmus, who was the strength and conditioning guy at USC from Tennessee. NCAA weightlifting champ, represents the state of the art, weightlifting, and training equipment, on the West Coast. I just think there are a lot of people like that. And as much as people, object to, Jordan, Cameron, he's done some really good things. He trains a lot of NFL guys. I just think there are people around available to USC right now, and that I would like to see them kind of go outside and talk to a lot of people and get a lot of people involved. And Chris Carlisle, I don't know you know, where he's going or how that, you know, he and Pete Carroll seem to be, you know, work so well together. And what happened there at the Seahawks, I really don't know. But he was kind of the guy that Ivan, you know, learned everything from. And wouldn't mind to see, you know, you get a number of people like that, you know, involved in terms of where does USC go? Where is it falling short? What's going on here? And kind of expand the horizons of strength and conditioning and nutrition. There's a lot of ways USC could go.
Yeah, I think there's some smart people around you could consult with. I mean, I wouldn't recommend hiring. I think it's a difference between, you know, being Mr. Universe and coaching your sons to, you know, having hundreds of athletes underneath. I think there's a pretty big difference. But certainly, I think you get them involved somehow. And you know, even with, hey, when you want to bring someone in, everybody does different things, but they have different philosophies. And I think you could talk to a John Brown and be like, okay, we interviewed three guys. Here's their different philosophies. And John Brown could say, well, I like what this guy's saying. Here's some questions about what this guy's, you know, like he feels you need to do this. And I'm like, well, here's some reasons, research why that wouldn't be the case. Everyone's going to have a different philosophy. You have to buy in with, you know, with what they're doing. And, you know, everyone's doing lifting, everyone's doing nutrition, all that stuff, but there's different ways and there's different research out there. And I think having people like John Brown around would be another voice to listen to, because he's certainly an expert on stuff. And you go, you know what, that makes sense. I could ask this question during the interview. So I think you could get him involved. But Curtis, I would not recommend hiring a guy that's never done that before. I'd much rather, USC's done a lot of that, rather go out and get someone who's worked in colleges and had a whole football team under them before.
Yeah, I do think that's the difference is doing it on a mass scale. And, you know, your kids might totally, you know, Amon Ra, I would think, he would be really, really coachable. I'm not sure everybody on, you know, the 105 guys on the roster may all be that coachable. And so there's a whole other, you know, aspect involved. But I do think, you know, just, you know, which are the exercises, which are the, you know, what's the equipment, you know, how much are we talking about? What do you need to do for football that maybe you don't, you know, need to do for other sports? And how does that tie into the nutrition part of it, you know, in terms of, you know, the kinds of protein and all of that kind of stuff, and how individualized you have to do, you know, everything, you know, by position groups and all of that. I just think there's a whole lot of things you can talk through. And I think the more people you have talking about it in terms of, you know, helping you make your judgments, I just think that's where the leadership at USC has to take over and say, how do we get this done? Who do we get it done with? You know, what do we do to make it happen? And that's what we need to see more of, I think. You know, what's going to make this work?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the key point from both of what you guys just said, especially Dan essentially just said it, but the key point of this offseason is to get voices that aren't the echo chamber that USC has had, because we see that hasn't worked. That's not working in a 5-7 season. The more you have outside voices telling you this is what you can do, this is what other successful programs are doing, and this is how you can do it, I think that will be a true key to a successful offseason and trying to go forward successfully is other opinions, other things besides the echo chamber that has been USC.
Well, you bring up a really good point, because with, say, a John Brown, he's had two sons precede Amon Ra. One went to Notre Dame, one went to Stanford. He's gone through all of what they've gone through at Notre Dame and Stanford, for example, both places where they're doing a heck of a job on all of those phases, you know, on the strength and conditioning and nutrition. And here's John observing how that works with his older two sons. So just that alone allows you to draw on some of the good things that, you know, two of USC's arch rivals are doing, you know, really well.
Before we jump into some other topics and more questions, I wanted to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's. Another year with Trader Joe's. It's great. Really happy to be there with them, and they've been great with us. We just got back from Hawaii, and my wife was like, yep, I got to go to Trader Joe's. So bought a bunch of stuff. We just had a nice Chinese chicken salad lunch. She bought all the ingredients, the vegetables and everything, and kale. You know, I hate kale. It's not bad, though. I mean, it's better when you like fried stuff. But, yeah, and like Put some chicken in the oven with the marinated and the Trader Joe's dressing and stuff. So it was good. We put it all together, but definitely go checking it out. The one at USC is awesome. We have a new one in Hermosa Beach that's great. And
I went to the one in Eastern Market in DC. I feel like I'm making like a stop at all the Trader Joe's.
Nice. Yeah. Keely just got back from Washington, DC.
Did indeed.
And you went to Trader Joe's. That's good.
I did. We stopped at it was right by our Airbnb, so it was very convenient.
Very
and
cool.
And for some reason, I was on Twitter, I guess it was a week and a half ago or something like that, and here's this list of the top 40 grocery chains in America. And there you go. At number one is Trader Joe's. So I grabbed the list and sent it over to our buddy, John Bassalone, the president of Trader Joe's. I don't think he'd gotten it yet. So he was all excited to see that. I guess it's the second year in a row Trader Joe's is the number one ranked grocery chain in America. So pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Congrats to them.
Yeah, nice. And then, so one topic I don't think we have a question on.
Okay.
This has been a huge problem around USC athletics for a long time. Okay. I'm really glad that finally someone in the athletic department stepped up and fixed this horrible, horrible problem. Dan, why the heck were song girls cheering at USC basketball games? This was a big problem. Yeah. Lynn Swann stepped in and fixed it. I think things are going in the right direction now.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand that
sarcasm
there are
font.
Issues
okay.
in terms of, yeah, that's sarcasm.
Please, I wasn't serious because the people were like, did you say that? That was not serious
at
all.
The angry tweets already flooding in.
Hopefully sarcasm noted, but the idea that, you couldn't figure out a way. Okay, they've got more stuff going on, with marketing and contests and I like DJ Malski, by the way. I think he does a really good job. So and he's very much a part of the game experience and what have you. And then you have Dance Force, and there was no question it was kind of a political deal between they were fighting over floor space. And I'm sorry, there had to be a way that you could, even if you did with, the song girls, a big, pregame one thing, on the floor and then something at halftime or whatever. And, you went back and forth and all of that, but it looks like, you got this, off the court battle for space on the court and for time in basketball games. And I'm just not sure that if you're running USC athletics and you decide to toss out the 50-year tradition of the song girls, I mean, you're talking about, for example, there are a lot of song girl alumni, and they weren't very happy, and they're still involved with USC and USC athletics. And I'm just thinking I would stay as far away from that as I could possibly do, and especially if you've got a lot of other things you probably need to be working on more important than the song girls and the Dance Force. So yeah, he gets to be able to work out a compromise that works for both of those groups, and the idea that somebody that wants to be there and has this tradition and the iconic place, I mean, let's face it, in the world of college sports, and we would use the word cheerleaders or dance team or whatever, there's only one song girls. I mean, they're kind of in their own place, between cheerleaders and a dance team. And if they want to do your basketball games, you let them do your basketball games. You just have to figure out how to get that done. And that USC couldn't, on that level, get that done doesn't give you a lot of hope for some of the other areas that ought to be a whole lot more difficult to pull off. But yeah, that what's going on with the song girls is just such it's another one of those self-inflicted wounds that USC just keeps doing to itself. You just can't keep doing stuff that, you didn't need to be doing. I mean, anybody who wants to come to USC basketball and cheer ought to be welcome and just say, come on, thank you. We'll figure it out. They didn't.
And I don't know if it's, I think it was Joey Kaufman that tweeted, it was like a record low attendance for USC UCLA basketball for a crosstown rivalry game. It was like 5,000 people or something there. And you know, you read that article in the LA Times that, you know, 50 more seats would have been sold to Songirl alumni, and they turned them down because they thought they were going to try to get involved somehow. It just seems like you're doing the wrong things for the wrong reasons and focusing in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and they told them not to wear their Songirl, sweaters or whatever, their Songirl, things that identify them as Songirl alumni. And come on, stop it. Just don't do it. You can't. I mean, somebody's afraid of something at USC that it's almost impossible to figure out. What are you afraid of? Come on. Welcome everybody.
Especially to basketball games. You don't want to limit anything at basketball games because I don't even like talking about basketball. Every time I mention it, you lose followers, but still, on Twitter. But there's no reason you should be limiting what's going on in basketball games. And there's no reason that you should be keeping the Songirls from stopping a tradition of a really long time. You got to think really hard. And you get the feeling we know people in the athletic department listen to this. Like, well, if you knew this, I'm like, I don't care what you say. Like Dan said, you can figure out there's a better solution to whatever problem that you foresee having because they need to sell more ad space and they're the floor, whatever it is, there's a better solution than removing a 50-year tradition of Songirls cheering at basketball games. I will guarantee you that. I think you should know that there's a better solution than what you've come up with. And not realize it because you live in a bubble. You don't realize the pushback you're going to get. You don't realize that everyone's going to come down on you hard. And you don't realize that the perception of what the athletic department is right now is not good. It's not good. And this just makes it worse. So, yes, you talk to people like, well, if you knew that, there's nothing that we could know unless, Songirls murdered somebody or something. Like, nothing would – you should stop this tradition. Like, this is one of the dumbest things I've gone on rants before. This is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard of. Like, what? Maybe the dumbest thing Lynn Swann's ever done, and that's crazy.
Well, and we would hear it tied into, the Songirl said something negative about the coaching on the sidelines at the homecoming game or whatever. I don't know. Keely was one of the people that heard that or whatever. I don't know where that all came from.
It was me. I heard they were just very into the football game. I think Shotgun was the one who tweeted that they were they were cheering Fire Helton chant.
Well, there was a Fire Helton chant and they joined in or something.
Yeah, it wasn't an official thing. I think penalizing them for something like that is out of line.
Well, I mean, I was, when you guys said it, I was thinking, wow, that gets me more enthused about the Songirls, that they care that much about football. That's great. I thought that was a real positive about the Songirls. That impressed the heck out of me that, that they're really, fans and they're really into it. So I would have taken that as a, hey, man, way to go, Songirls. I mean, you can't let that influence you one way or the other about the coaches. But just the fact that they were into it that much, that's cool. I thought that was a really good thing.
So I know I wasn't I mentioned it and it's like I don't get that fired up, and then you think about it this is just so dumb. Just stop doing dumb things. Don't do dumb things
when the fan base is already very frustrated. Why are you kicking them when they're down? It just doesn't make sense.
It's like what could we do to really upset the fans at a basketball game? Let's take away the Songirls. You could double the price of beer. You could take away the song. I don't know if you're trying to upset fans and what do you get? You get the basketball team's not doing that great, but they beat UCLA, which is always great. And it's the lowest attended, crosstown rivalry game in whatever Joey said. I forget what it was, but it was, for a long time. There's too many of those things. This is the worst thing since a very long time. We've been saying too many of those stats lately.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't go out of your way to not be positive, and bring even if you have a little conversation with the Songirls and say, okay, just think it, don't say it or whatever, and thank you for caring that much about football, and we're really pleased. And all the alumni want to come. Hey, we'll give you a special seat. We'll give you a special a chance to you know, and introduce them and say thanks for being here. And all you
yeah.
They turned it into a negative and could have been a real positive. I mean, where does that judgment sort of a thing coming from that is kind of afraid of you know, their own shadows? I mean, who, and it was somebody lower down, I think, that was telling the song girls not to wear, you know, maybe we can't sell you a bunch of tickets, especially if you're going to show up in your, you know, your song girl alumni attire or whatever. No. And is that person thinking they're trying to protect somebody above them? And why is this all this defensiveness? I mean, you know, I mean, it just makes things worse. I mean, this isn't a good time for USC Athletic, but you can't go into a shell and you know, just, you know, some fetal position and just hope nobody, you know, notices you. No, you got to keep, as they say, right on instead of whatever the heck it is they're doing now.
So in a slightly related question, Tyler in Sammamish, he says, where my UW and Washington State buddies are thrilled we kept Helton. He says, Ryan, I'm guessing you'll say no way to this, but isn't there someone or anybody in the brass category of USC Athletics you could talk to off the record to convey the despair of the fan base? I mean, the Peristyle is as hardcore fan basey as it gets, and the depression and frustration here is palpable, not a scientific sampling, I realize. If I was in USC leadership in any capacity, I'd actually seek guys out like you to get some fan data points. Do they really think things are anywhere near even okay?
It's a great, who was that?
Tyler in Sammamish.
Tyler, yeah. So, so to understand the Peristyle, if you're not, a lot of people are just podcast listeners. The Peristyle is like the crazy USC fans, not crazy in a bad way, but the most rabid. They care, most of them care about like recruits. They care about everything, every little tidbit that's going on. So that's a different world. Like, there's a lot of USC fans that just like going to games. They get tickets, whatever they want to do. This is the hardcore of the fans. But it's true. And we talk to people that are in the athletic department that read it. And they understand it. And they know that people are right. But that doesn't mean that the powers that be, the bosses at the top, feel the same way. So it's there. I mean, it's definitely... The feelings that we, you know, have been expressed to the people, it's not like the athletic department doesn't know, but I think the people, there's a lot of people on the, maybe the lower levels or middle levels, or whatever, that know and understand. It's really just trying to convince the people at the very top that this stuff matters, that what the fans feel, which is usually pretty on point, matter.
Yeah, I think Peristyle people are the, you know, canaries in the coal mine. And you got to pay attention to them. I think they're going to get there first, and they're going to get there maybe, you know, on tangents or maybe, you know, they'll get some things wrong. But based, you know, you pay attention to it. I mean, and you're right. That's like a built-in marketing survey that you might have to pay, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get. You know, you can kind of, over time, I think, really pick up on you know, where USC Athletics, you know, is headed, or, you know, where what their perception is. I mean, I'm just reading, for example, talk about perception. I just read John Wilner's way too early take on the Pac-12 football next year, and I think he has USC fourth in the South, third or fourth, whatever. He has them behind UCLA. I know that. Utah and UCLA. And Arizona State, he's got them fourth in the Pac-12 South. Think about that. I mean, just think about, you know, whether he's right or wrong. He's the, you know, he's the guy that basically there's only one guy that's sort of chronicling the whole Pac-12, and it's John Wilner. And, you know, he says, oh, of course they could win the South, but who knows, you know, the way things are going there and all that, you know, that's not some nutcase on the P who you identify as, say, oh, this guy's so out of it, I never pay attention. This is the guy who, if people nationally are looking for, well, who's the one guy that covers all the Pac-12? That's the guy. And what he thinks of USC is something that USC ought to be very, very scared about.
Yeah. Wilner does a great job and stuff, but that's... It's disturbing. You know, you could easily see him win in the South, but you could see him finishing third or fourth. But yeah, that's, I don't know. I mean, I like the way you put that, Dan, where it's a, you know, canary in the coal mine. The problem is that every time the canary dies, doesn't mean there's a gas leak. So we get a lot of, we got a lot of dead canaries, I guess you could say, in the peristyle. But I mean, they're usually able to see like, hey, this is going to be a problem, you know? And, you know, a lot of times it's like that. Like when, you know, what did USC do last year when the, you know, they needed to hire a quarterback's coach, you know, promote Brian Ellis. And, you know, a lot of people on the peristyle right away is like, well, you're going to have a rookie quarterback and you're gonna have a rookie quarterback coach. Hey, that could be a problem. You know, JT Daniels didn't have the greatest year in the world. People are, you know, really critical about him, but a lot of people on the peristyle are looking back, like, remember we told you like 6 months ago, like, why did you do this instead of getting inexperienced, you know? And it's not like, it's definitely, oh, that's definitely going to be a problem. Cause you know, it's hard to tell like what coach is gonna be good or not, but that's a potential issue. The quarterback position was under, you know, performing a little bit. And you're like, hey, you know, we talked about this 6 months ago. So that's one of those canaries that died. You're like, yeah, that was probably due to a gas leak.
Well, and the other part of that was that the offensive coordinator was not going to be in the quarterback room. So you had an offensive coordinator who was in the wide receiver room. So, and talking during the year about wishing he had more time with JT Daniels. I mean, I'm sorry, that doesn't work. You gotta do better than that. You gotta figure it out. And they didn't.
Yeah.
And
but guys on the peristyle usually know something like that. And you know, the average fan in the Coliseum probably doesn't. Like, oh, you know, I couldn't tell you if T. Martin's on the sideline or in the press box or what he's doing. Like they don't know it. So I think it's a really good point, Tyler, that and there's a lot of informed fans there. And there's a lot of, you know, people that are all over the place, but it's not like the athletic department doesn't know. But I think, you know, does it get into Lynn Swann's brain? I don't think so. I think people around Lynn Swann definitely know that and they see those concerns, but I don't think it's getting to the very top.
Or coming, you know, I just think we've always thought that USC in general, leadership was kind of in a bubble. And it's an easy place to become, to get into a bubble because, you know, so much is happening positive for USC, you know, in terms of the student body and the finances. You look at the campus, you look at the location, you look at everything that's, you know, it's a happening place. And they don't have to, you know, do a lot of things right. And they're going to keep moving up. They got to avoid doing the big things bad, you know, the big things wrong. And they haven't been doing that. And that's kind of the problem. But if you don't hear, you know, about what could go wrong because you're in this bubble, then you don't avoid a lot of the things. And we're talking not just athletics. There are a whole lot of areas where if it doesn't get to the right people for whatever reason, it's hard to avoid, you know, those, you know, the kind of things that USC's, you know, having to deal with right now as they look for a new president. And you would wish USC would get out of the bubble, listen to people, talk to people, pay attention to people, care about what people were thinking and all of that. You know, don't dismiss them automatically. You know, the quote that those are just $100 donors. You know, it said something that, you know, we don't need to listen to those people. Yes, you do. You need to listen to everybody. And you've got a lot of ways to do that if you will. But they're kind of bunkered in right now, Ryan, don't you think? We haven't kind of heard or seen from almost anybody. And they don't seem to be all that interested in coming out and talking about where things are going or what they're doing or what they're thinking or how this is getting better.
All right. Do we have any more questions, Keely?
Let's get into we have a lot more OC questions. So okay. I'm going to kind of combine them. Steve, class of 97, says, why is Clay Helton so painfully slow at filling assistant coaching positions? It seems like with every other major and non-major program in the country, they fill coaching vacancies within days to a week. What is with the lack of urgency at USC? And then Gerald Grossman says, can someone explain to me why Helton has not hired an OC yet? If Helton does not hire one soon, some commits will leave for other schools.
Well, we already talked about the two possibilities. One, that they do have a hire who's still coaching and they don't want to interfere with the move to the Super Bowl by the Rams. The other possibility is it's going to be somebody on the staff elevated, and they really don't want to tell that. They don't want to really, you know, get that out there. So I don't know that we don't know that somebody's been hired, but I don't think we know that no one has been hired. I don't think we know that it's just taking him a long time or whatever. I don't think we know that. We can't fill in that blank.
It's funny. So I think part of it is just planning too. We talked about that. I don't think they were really planning to lose Cliff Kingsbury. No, but there wasn't really a lot of backup plans. I don't think there was like this big list to begin with. Kingsbury sort of just fell into their lap. So it wasn't like you could go to option two. There wasn't an option two. There was just Kingsbury was there. And our buddy Chris Cartman, who covers the Sun Devils for Sun Devil Source, he tweeted out, so Herm Edwards and Danny Gonzalez weighed in on the addition of Jamal Cain as their new defensive line coach. And Chris tweeted a follow-up to that. Sun Devils moved very quickly to replace Nua, a development that hinted at good work developing a list of potential candidates ahead of time. Herm Edwards suggests here that's exactly what his USC staff did. It's a good sign of being prepared. And so that was like a quick
turn. You mean ASU staff?
USC. I'm sorry, ASU staff. Sorry. And I think in this case, this was like Kingsbury just kind of fell right into your lap, and then there wasn't really much else to do, and there wasn't any sort of backup plan, even though there was buzz about NFL teams still being interested. I think USC should have done a little bit more of that. I don't think there was a lot of it, to be honest.
Well, I think the other thing, with Cliff Kingsbury, you didn't have to go into what's our playbook going to look like. How much are we going to, and we keeping anything over? No. Now, if you don't get, Cliff Kingsbury, now what do you do? Do you still go with the air raid and try to find somebody who can do what he can do? Or do you, get somebody that, is a pretty good offensive coordinator, but he's not going to go that route? I just think there are a lot of issues that kind of have to be decided because offensive coordinators aren't interchangeable. Are you going to, still run the, what you would call a pro style, gumbo attack or what are you going to, what are you going to try to do? And with Kingsbury, you didn't have to decide any of that. It was all decided. You were going to do whatever he does. But now, there's nobody exactly like Kingsbury, I don't think, out there. And so now you're left with a whole lot of choices that you have to make, maybe before you even, go down the road as to who's gonna come in to do that for you. So I don't think we know what the holdup might be, but there are a lot of reasons that could be holdups.
So we have a question from Anonymous. They didn't really put their name, but he says, first, I want to say Gary P. will be missed. RIP and fight on from heaven. He says, question is for Dan. Who would you hire as offensive coordinator if you were Clay Helton? My idea would be Graham Harrell.
Yeah, I think if you were going to say, let's try to capture everything we thought we had with Cliff Kingsbury, you would probably go that route, I would think. I might talk to, a couple of the, original innovator types that we've already mentioned here, and just to get their take on things. But I think that would be, the safest way to go. And I just, I've been saying it all last year that this is a team that's set up to run the air raid between the quarterback and the wide receiver depth and the abilities physically and, the way they've been coached of the offensive line and the kind of running backs they've got. I think that sets up the best, for this team. It's not what USC has done traditionally. It's not what Clay said he was going to do and has always said he's going to do. But I think that would be that'd be the way I'd probably go if I had to, without, talking to all the guys. I think that would be the safest way to go and just keep going down that same path that you were going to go down with Cliff Kingsbury. That would be my call.
Yeah, I like that one too. And we talked about this before. I talked to Norm Chow a couple of weeks ago at a luncheon that I was speaking at, and he was definitely willing to come in as a consultant. And again, be a voice in the room, be a part of that process to figure out who the next one should be. So there's some options there for USC.
Yeah, I like that idea. I mean, and everybody, you know, gets mad at Alabama because they've got, you know, they've got so many consultants, you know, I don't know that they can, you know, get them all on one bus, you know, and analysts and all that. But he's getting guys to come to, you know, Tuscaloosa and have them to pay for it. But USC's in a place where there are a lot of people available to just, you know, come and talk to us and or be part of it, you know. And you know, you're not talking a lot of money when you're hiring, you know, retired guys to, you know, to offer you another look. And I would think I'd like to see USC go more in that direction and get a number of voices in the room and not feel so, you know, threatened by, you know, people thinking, you know, outside the box thoughts. I think that'd be a good thing for USC at this point.
Don wants to know, are any college coaches or staff permitted to be at the Polynesian Bowl? Is Clay Helton or any other coaches, were they, and recruiters, were they there?
No, you can't be there for that kind of stuff. But they, Clay Helton was there, but a few of the assistant coaches were there for in-home visits of a couple of the Hawaiian prospects. So they were there. So they were in Hawaii, but they can't attend like the practices or things like that. All that stuff is outlawed. So they used to be they changed the dead period stuff, but it used to be for the Army All-American Bowl in San Antonio. After the game, it was open. And then like the lobby of the hotel it's a crap show. It was crazy with all these coaches. And Sark, if you remember when he was at Washington, pulled a bus up next to the hotel that was like all decorated. So it was sort of like a little official visit or like a visitor center for, you know, come to Washington. And I think Tosh Lapoy was part of that. I believe he was part of that staff. Kenny Polamalu
they have an open bar in the back.
Maybe. But it was, so it was crazy. And like the coaches would be there and, that's outlawed now, but no, the coaches couldn't go, to the bowl or the practice or anything like that. That would be, I don't know whatever the rules are, but that would not be allowed.
Yeah. I think, Nansen and, Tim Drevno, visited with Vamahi.
Yeah. Anuk Vamahi. Yeah. And then there was another, defensive back.
Was Coach K there?
Yeah. I believe Coach K was there as well.
Yeah.
So I think those three coaches. We heard that Helton might be there, but it wasn't. It was just like the three assistant coaches.
Yep. And as related to the Polynesian Bowl, Steve in Poway says, I know it's not a position of need, but after Saturday's Polynesian Bowl performance, isn't Puka Nacua more important than ever to lock in on signing day? The post which you made available on USCfootball.com, thank you, he says, shows him jumping for joy on the sidelines after his now famous catch was ruled inbounds, and it looks like he jumped so high that his waist goes higher than his shoulders of people standing on the sidelines. That kid has got hands and hops. Lock him in. Trojans, as always, fight on, Steve in Poway.
No, I don't disagree. The unfortunate thing is you get kids like that at the position of absolute least need, and they just keep lining up, you know, for USC, which is one reason you'd want to run a lot of plays on offense, because you got a lot of guys that you want to get on the field, you know, if everybody comes through. But you know, the downside is you'd like to see some offensive and defensive linemen like that are real athletic and that USC's zeroing in on. You can almost have, which is another reason that you might need to go to the air raid. I think it just, you know, a lot of guys, they got to get on the field and as soon as possible at wide receiver. I mean, just, you know, you just have to do it.
Yeah, he's great. I did a one-on-one interview with him on camera. I did my little Keeley role with him. I'm 6'3". He was almost as tall as me. And I remember seeing him at the it was one of the USC camps he came over for. And he was pretty good. But you're just like, he seems a little small and stuff. And sometimes I'd look at him from across the room and he'd be kind of small. But then he'd stand next to me. I'm like, he's my height. Like, he's almost my height. He's pretty, and obviously you see some of the catches he was making. He ended up being the MVP for the winning team, Makai, I believe it was. And so, no, I think he's a priority dude. I still love Kyle Ford. I've seen a lot more in person, and I think he's awesome. But yeah, Puka Nacua is great. He seemed pretty confident that he was going to USC to me, but I do think that, you know, if the offensive coordinator thing changes, then that could, you know, change his mind too.
It also gives USC a wide receiver group bigger than any wide receiver group in the country, I think, if you look at, you know, Michael Pittman and Tyler Vaughns and Devin Williams and, you know, Brew McCoy and all those. I mean, they are an intimidating athletic, you know, group of guys that, you know, can win the, you know, the 50-50 balls and win the, you know, the balls up in the air and all that. I mean, they just, I'm not sure anybody would have, you know, as many big, you know, athletic wide receivers, maybe not quite have, you know, that one super speed burner, but, you know, a lot of guys that ought to be able to catch the ball, against, you know, your typical, you know, corners.
We got another voicemail for you. Let me play it. Here you go.
Hey guys, this question's for Dan. I know I might sound a little bit of like a homer saying this, but do you think that getting a former high school football coach from Texas and Coach Jinks is finally going to bring some toughness and grit to that coaching room? I mean, I'm sorry, I can't think of a better way to say this. We just need a guy who's going to come in there and kick some ass. And it doesn't seem like we have anybody on this coaching staff who is willing or able or allowed to do that right now. And I'm just hoping that maybe even a slight shakeup like Coach Jinks coming in will help that situation, especially when you look at the fact that even the supposed, you know, flag runners for toughness in our conference, like Washington and Stanford, like they don't even hold a candle to the Ohio States and the, you know, the Georgias, Alabamas, Clemson, Texases of the world, or LSUs of the world. I don't know. We need something to change with toughness, because otherwise, no matter how much we throw the ball or how good our quarterback is, then we'll still get crushed in a semifinal game like OU did. Fight on, Jason Longhorn Country.
Yeah, Jason, I'm not so sure, you know, if it's one coach can do that. I was always thinking that, you know, Kenichi Udeze would bring that to the staff, and I just don't know that we saw that, and I don't know if that's on, you know, on any one individual, but the word toughness is, you know, that's the missing element, I think, in a lot of what USC does, and we don't see it, and it makes it really tough to, you know, play people that aren't as good as you, but you know, and even in the Pac-12, when you get out tough by Arizona State, for example, that's not good, you know, it's just not. That's not a good thing. And UCLA just totally out tough USC last year, and probably Cal did. That's inexcusable, to be honest. And you know where that comes from, I don't know if it can come from anywhere other than the top. I mean, I'm just not sure. Maybe if you had Ed Orgeron as your you know second in command. Maybe you get a little of that, but it's really hard to do that if the head coach doesn't really believe in it and doesn't really preach it and doesn't practice it and just doesn't seem to quite understand it. And it's tough, you know, you're already in the Pac-12 where, you know, you're not seeing a lot of that, you know, toughness, and Stanford probably isn't what Stanford used to be. And you just, and, you know, when you talk about toughness and people talk about, you know, Washington and Peterson, and you saw when USC 2 years ago showed up with athletes and they were ready to play, there was no question Washington's toughness didn't stand, you know, against USC's talent. But toughness doesn't just happen with one guy or, you know, one thing that you do. It happens with, you know, you got to believe in it. You got to coach it. You got to do it in the weight room. You got to do it every part of the program. And we don't see that. And I think we need to see it. I think one of the things with Kingsbury that you were excited about was, even without toughness, if they are good, really good at what they're doing on offense, and they score enough points, and they're precise, and they, you know, they're talented, and they get all of that done, maybe they can, you know, he can be Oklahoma or whatever. And you can score enough points to win an awful lot of football games. Maybe not the national championship, but then you think, well, maybe that'll come. But not with without it coming from the top, I don't think.
Do we have any more voicemails, Ryan?
That's the last voicemail.
I didn't mean to end with the question, one of the depressing questions. He's Tom from South Bay. He says, this is for Dan. As bad as Cliff's leaving, it may be a good thing for USC fans. It will expedite Clay Helton's departure, and maybe Lynn Swann will follow him. With the new schedule and no changes that have been made, Helton will be lucky to win 5 games. What are your thoughts? Fight on, Tom.
I'm just not convinced that that schedule is that difficult to compete against. I mean, obviously, they weren't ready to compete against it this year. I just think the natural maturity of the talent that USC has ought to put them in a place where, I know Wilner picked Arizona State ahead of USC, but, I mean, they lose their quarterback. They lose their, you know, if they lose N'Keal Harry, if he doesn't show up, you know, they don't have a chance in that game. I just think USC can't help but be better next year, no matter if nothing changes, just because those guys are a year older. So I'm not sure about the, you know, can't compete against that schedule. But and I think you got to root for USC to do as well as they possibly can every game and to start getting things right and let the whole, head coaching thing play out and see where that goes. But I just not people would say, boy, that's good. We're going to have another sub 500 season. I don't see that. I don't see how a USC fan can think that way. You got to root for those kids. You got to root for them to be able to do as well as they possibly can and not get into the, you know, whole thing about how is this going to affect next year's coaches and all that. I just don't think you should go that route.
Yep, I agree.
So that's all we got.
I didn't
end on a bummer. Tom's not super, he's not a glass half full kind of guy. But there's definitely USC fans that are like that. Not just like Tom, but I mean like, they're like, you know what? Kingsbury would have won a bunch of games this way. USC is going to be under 500, and you'll definitely get rid of Clay. Like, Dan, there's a lot of fans that are saying that exact same thing.
Yeah, I agree. No, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
So
I don't see it.
I think if you get like a guy like Graham Harrell, I think that shows you like, okay, they still are serious. Because when you're looking at this coaching staff as a whole, and I think there was a post in the Peristyle kind of about it today. Kingsbury was the big, 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 big move. It was like everything. And all the other moves after that, like Mike Jinks was pretty good. I mean, he's a former head coach in college for a couple of years. Like, so that's a nice move. But everyone else, like a Joe DeForest, like internal promotions, like that's not the direction. That's not what Brian Kelly did. Not only did he change more, but they were all bigger changes. USC had the biggest change, Kingsbury, but now that's gone. So you really need to replace it with a big change, no matter what you do. Like one of the updates I put in is like, you know, hey, Todd Haley, who was the longtime Steeler offensive coordinator, and he's mostly an NFL guy, but you bring in someone like that, he was fired after 8 games at the Browns with Hugh Jackson, but that would at least be like, dude, this guy's been a head coach in the NFL. Like that would be something. I think any kind of move like that, whoever it is, at least it would be like, all right, that's significant. Or if it's promote Tim Drevno and Clay Helton still calls the plays, that's just going back into familiar. And I really think, Dan, you just have to blow it out and do something big like that. It's not going to be as big as Kingsbury, but something. Otherwise, because all the other moves USC made were so small, this one was big. You need to replace big with big.
Yeah, and the problem there is Kingsbury – there isn't another coach like Kingsbury available. I mean, he was the perfect hire for going in the direction they were going to go. And, you know, they could worry about all the other stuff. And I mean, what he's done with his offenses at Texas Tech, with no matter who he had playing for him or what the skill set for, or how many guys got injured or whatever, he put points on the board. And that was going to be, whatever you thought of the other coaches, you think, well, doesn't matter. He's going to get the job done. there isn't anybody that you can say, walk in the door, he's going to get the job done. But, you know, at this point, you probably got to do all the other things that we haven't seen them do. You know, the Brian Kelly stuff at Notre Dame, we haven't seen that. Now, maybe, you know, you'll have a new strength and conditioning guy. That'll be a start. You'd like to hear some things about, here's what we're going to do to, excuse the expression, beef up your nutrition. And, you know, start making those, and here's where we're going to add to the recruiting staff, the recruiting support staff. And those are the kinds of things you'd like to see, you know, report from the athletic director or the head coach in terms of, this is what we've been working on. And we know we've got to, you know, start competing more seriously, and we are going to do that. Then you get a Graham Harrell, and he fits into that general direction of improvements for the program. But just by itself, they put themselves in a position, and not their fault necessarily, but because of Kingsbury being Kingsbury, they couldn't hire anybody like him to follow. And so now you'd like to see him say, okay, but we got to do a lot of things right, including the offensive coordinator, but, you know, we're not going to be able to replace Kingsbury. And that was always going to be the problem. As much as Kingsbury didn't think he was going to get an NFL head coaching offer, and USC obviously isn't thinking he's going to get an NFL head coaching offer. I mean, he didn't obviously think he was going to get a big-time college head coaching offer at this point in time, and that this USC job would be perfect for him for Kingsbury to set up where he went next. And so here he goes, you know, after 3 or 4 weeks, you got the Jets and the Cardinals coming around and talking about head coaching offers. And at that point, if you're USC, you've got two choices. Either we offer him the head coaching job here, or we wish him well and we don't do anything, you know, dumb to make it look like we're trying to, you know, hold him to the offensive coordinator's job at USC if there's a possibility he's going to get a head coaching job in the NFL. At that point, you really need to start lining up the next group of candidates. But at that point, you also have to make a decision. Are we going to stay with the air raid? Are we going to go the same direction offensively or not? And we don't know that decision's been made at all. We have no idea where they're going offensively. Hopefully they do.
Hopefully. Hope is not a plan. And
and that's why you hate using the word hope, because we've heard it too often from people who can't be in a place where they got to hope. They got to make it happen.
Yeah.
We're looking on the outside. We're allowed to use that word, but because we don't know what they're thinking.
No.
And we're hoping they're thinking right. But even for us, we don't like to hear that word, hope.
No.
Again, it's not a good plan, and it doesn't always work out. I mean, going through with at the end of Pete's time, and then with Lane and Sark, I was thinking how many times you ended up in situations where you were hoping that Lane would not do this, or you were hoping that Sark, and that never works out.
No.
It's just, if you're thinking, I hope he doesn't do this, he's going to do that.
Yeah.
And
it's hard to imagine, like, help you. Bill Belichick or Nick Saban, like, on the whiteboard going, like, drawing up a play, and, like, hopefully the middle linebacker doesn't go here, because then, that's never part of, like, their mentality at all. Or hopefully this. No, they plan for everything, they prepare for everything, and they have a direction. It's not always right, doesn't always work, but they know exactly what they're doing and why they're doing it. And you don't always get that feeling around USC.
Well, I mean, it always came through. I thought it was one of the great moments that we actually got invited into McKay, into a classroom, to go over kind of an offensive session with Lane, who was really trying.
Yeah,
on this particular
that was good.
Day.
That was a good thing they did, yeah.
And he brought out his, laminated Denny's menu of play options and all of that. And I still remember, talked about the first column, and they're all color coded and all that. And this is what we're, you know, this is what we really believe in, blah, blah, blah. And then the second column was the stuff that, maybe, you know, there may be a time or there may be a place in a game or whatever. And I said, what's in the third column? And he said, well, those are the plays we never practice and we hope we never. And I said, why are they on the sheet? I mean, we don't practice them. And then, you know, and then the famous moment when the game that turned everything around for Lane, if you remember, the at Arizona, and the famous drawing up the play in the grass on the sidelines to Robert Woods, if you remember that play that didn't exactly work. I think he ran out of bounds before he caught the ball or something. But I still remember, you know, with all those plays on that menu, they drew one up on the sidelines on the ground. And I'm thinking, no, that's not how you do it. I mean, obviously using Bill Belichick is and Brady, that combination is. And I know people say, aren't you tired of watching those guys get to the Super Bowl? I said, no, Belichick is such a great coach. And Brady, I said, that's like perfection, watching those guys do what they do. They don't have the best players, but they are so much more ready to do what they do. It's beautiful watching those guys do what they do. It's just, that's how you're supposed to do it.
Our friend Colin Coward had some good points on his show this week. And there's a lot of hate. You know, I went to high school in Massachusetts, but I'm a Steeler fan, not really a Patriots fan, but I'm fine when they win. It doesn't bother me. But you're talking about, if it's like the Yankees or the Red Sox, like, yes, they pay more money than everybody and you have better teams. Or basketball, it's like you have to get the, you know, it's L.A. or Miami or, you know, Chicago. You're getting the free agents to the big markets or whatever. But for the Patriots, like, they don't have the best players. They have, you know, everyone's got the same amount of money. It's much more even play. They just do it better. And I think that's right. Like, they are better at their jobs than the other people are. They have their own system. They'll cut great players. It doesn't matter. They don't, you know, get emotionally involved. You know, Keeley, they're not going to be like the Angels and sign a guy past his prime because who used to be good and sign him to a 10-year deal or anything.
Wow, shots.
Sorry about
shots
that.
Shots just fired.
They would never do anything like that. And so, yes, you have to admire the way they do things. And, you know, it's great to have one of the greatest coach ever, maybe, and the greatest quarterback ever teamed up, but they've moved a lot of parts around those guys and just make it work year after year after year.
Yeah, I mean, they've done things that nobody else, and he changes from week to week. That's what's so good. He's able to coach it. I mean, that they come out, you know, with a different looking defense every week geared to just stopping you. What you do, we're going to take our guys and put them in the best places to stop what you do. And you can't know what we're going to do with our guys unless you're, you know, filming our practices. And we're so good at it that we can coach our guys that this won't be like new for them, that they have that ability to do that. And that's almost impossible. I mean, what they do, you almost can't do. It's too hard. And they do it and they make it work. They're certainly not the most talented team. They're not even close, but there they are. It's just truly amazing.
Well, we kind of got off on some tangents. Sorry, yeah. Sorry for the Vlad. Was it Vladimir Guerrero? Right, he was the one.
Okay, hold on. Wait,
who was the guy that signed the 10-year deal? Was it?
Well, we had his name is forgetting me right now. Texas Rangers. He came over, and then we also had Pujols. Still,
yeah, Pujols. Yeah,
Pujols. Yeah, but, he's a wonderful. He's a wonderful man and a wonderful human being. And he was past his pride prime when they signed him to however many years it was. 15 years. I don't know.
No. We have a long history of this. First, it was Josh Hamilton. Yeah. Then Pujols.
Oh, God.
I think the Angels stopped paying for Josh Hamilton like a year ago. So this shows you how good they are.
Wow. Yeah. I think Vlad wasn't as bad, but the Pujols one was like, you were going to get like two or three awesome years.
Vlad is in the Hall of Fame wearing an Angels hat rather than.
But there was like two.
Yeah, Vlad was fine.
Yeah, come on.
But the Pujols one was like two or three great years, and then you're going to have like 7 years of nothing.
Yeah, he's still a problem.
He's still, he's like on your six or seven, right? Or so, like, it's not.
Ryan,
I don't know. Sorry.
Let's not go there.
At least, you know, you get you know,
Mike Trout.
Like, yeah, for a little while. He's awesome. Sorry, we really went.
And they got rid of my favorite covering him was Torrey Hunter. I thought he was.
Oh. I love Torrey Hunter.
He was. How do you get rid of him? He was the best guy in the clubhouse. He could do everything.
He was actually in the Coliseum tunnel a couple years ago when his son played for Notre Dame, and I was so starstruck. I was like, oh my gosh, it's Torrey Hunter.
Yeah.
He was just a lovely. He was one of the best people ever. For a team, just a good influence and leader and all that. You just can't get rid of those guys. It's amazing some stuff that got to make a lot of calls and they got to be right. And we'll see because we're talking about USC making calls and it's not easy.
Yeah, there's good organizations and then there's not so good organizations, and we know which way leading towards USC lately. But hopefully they can turn things around. We can hope. We don't want USC administration and coaches to be hoping because then they don't really have a plan.
How long would the Bill Belichick era at USC last? See the first meeting? The first a handshake? I mean, really, it just, wouldn't you love to see him come in and sit down sometime and say, now tell me what you're doing?
They go, what?
Really?
You want to win, right? Sorry, we shouldn't end on a negative one. There were some positive things, and Keely, I'm just blaming you for all this. Send your hate tweets to @Keely is my name.
Stop it.
Nice. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up. Great stuff. Keely, you're in studio here. Dan Weber on the line. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thank you very much for tuning in.
Thank you much.
Yeah, thank you much for the Peristyle Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.